As books became more accessible and affordable, individuals were now personally consuming, reflecting upon, and critiquing written texts. It was an idea meritocracy. No longer was, quote, truth conferred solely by the ordained to the illiterate masses inside of churches. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And I've got another great piece. We're jumping right back into Bitcoin Magazine, actually, on this one. And this one is written by Anil, A-N-I-L. I've got the link to his Twitter page. We have not read him on the show yet, or anything by him on the show yet. But this was just a great piece on revolutionary technology and the implications and reasons why, and look back on history to compare Bitcoin to the printing press. And it's absolute fire. You guys are going to love this one. Real quick, a huge thank you to our wonderful sponsors. We've got the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet, a super secure open source hardware wallet to secure your Bitcoin savings. And of course, we have banking services, debit card, free exchange, no trading fees at all. Level.co, LVL.co. They are both offering amazing products and services to help spread and make it more useful and more secure to hold and use Bitcoin in your everyday life. Check them both out at guyswan.com. That's Swan with two N's. They're both right at the top of the page. All right, with that, let's go ahead and jump into today's read, again from Bitcoin Magazine, written by Anil, and it is titled Bitcoin and the Printing Press by Anil. How Information-Freeing Technology Shapes Society. This is the story of two disruptive innovations, which arrived several centuries apart with remarkable similarities. It's about the largely invisible technological forces that alter incentives of obedience and steer the evolution of how societies are organized. The mistrust of institutions. Trust is the key ingredient that enables us to cooperate and trade. The greater our access to information, the greater our ability to assess reputation and therefore trustworthiness. When it becomes easier to establish trust through verifying truth, those who benefited most from the previous opacity are often the first and the loudest critics. Making promises that are known to be outside of your control or powers is a surefire way to degrade trust. That's why large institutions, dependent on a mass audience for survival, make promises in ways that are difficult to measure over loosely defined timelines. This is often combined with actively limiting access to the very information needed to make such an assessment. But this is largely a story about innovation and the institutions that derive power as gatekeepers for the flow of information. The Great Famine and the Black Death. Innovation, by definition, must be useful to society. So it's no surprise that it explodes onto the scene at precisely the time that it is demanded. In the Middle Ages, Western Europe was under control of the Roman Catholic Church, the primary institution seen as responsible for people's well-being. It held an undisputed level of influence and moral authority. However, two crucial events would cause people to question what seemed an unshakable level of devotion. Between 1315 and 1322, famine struck Europe, reducing the population of towns and cities by an estimated 10% to 25%. Bad weather caused flooding, which caused crop failures, which led to cattle starvation, and a downward spiral ensued. 25 years later, fleas, carried by rats aboard European ships returning from Asia, would ignite the deadliest pandemic in recorded human history, the Black Death, 1346 to 1353, resulted in the deaths of between 75 million and 200 million people. This catastrophic population loss fundamentally altered the power structures between landowner and laborer. The Great Financial Crisis and COVID-19. Today, the global financial crisis of 2007 and 2008, and subsequent bailouts, as referenced in Bitcoin's Genesis block, coupled with the botched response to the COVID-19 pandemic from global bodies and governments, has severely damaged the social contract with citizen taxpayers. Misaligned incentive structures have created a moral hazard among elected officials and unelected central bankers. Telling a person that their cost of living has not increased and that their quality of life has not decreased, when it directly contradicts lived experience, is one way to prove ignorance, malice, or both. The uneven distribution of inflation as a result of unprecedented currency debasement is no longer able to be hidden in a world where all kinds of market data is available in every pocket. Quote, "The trend of more wealth inequality, more polarization, and more discord is a major threat to our collective future, and it is all being caused by the same thing, adherence to an economic system designed for a different time." Jeff Booth, The Price of Tomorrow. A heavy tax no longer tolerated. Authority dependent upon tax collection requires a captive and compliant population. A few conditions are necessary. There's a clearly defined and guarded jurisdiction. There are incentives to create wealth within it, and there are barriers and detriments to prevent a critical mass from exiting the jurisdiction with their wealth or specialized knowledge. What Johann Gutenberg and Satoshi Nakamoto gave us were new methods to permissionlessly transport information across time and space, outside the purview of the establishment. This challenges gatekeeper monopolies that are reliant on taxation, incentivizing them to act honestly and provide a valuable service to retain patronage. On innovation. Paradigm shifts often come from the ensuing market forces as a result of innovation, rather than top-down decrees. The recipe for adoption requires it be A, easy to replicate once discovered, and B, dumb or neutral, allowing for tinkering on the fringes. For Gutenberg, the printing press was made possible by a handful of existing inventions: paper making from pulp, metal casting, and the wine press. His own skills, knowledge, and experiences as an intellectual, an engineer, and a merchant likely also explain why he was so well positioned to see and grasp this opportunity to innovate. Additionally, by the time the printing press was unveiled, eyeglasses were in broad use. This allowed a much wider population to not only read, but to read with magnification, enabling Gutenberg to reduce the size of text and thus the number of pages required in a book. Parallels can be drawn to how Nakamoto designed the Bitcoin protocol. Well aware of the fact that data storage costs would continue to trend downwards over time, increasing the pool of participants able to operate a node. Quote, "The genius of Bitcoin in inventing a digital currency successful in the real world is not in creating a new abstruse mathematics or cryptographic breakthrough, but in putting together decades-old pieces in a semi-novel but extremely unpopular way." Gwen Branwen, from Bitcoin Is, Worse is Better. A key feature of both Bitcoin and the printing press is that they are dumb innovations. They cannot distinguish between the content being created and communicated. Quote, "The dumb network becomes a platform for independent innovation, without permission, at the edge. The result is an incredible range of innovations carried out at an even more incredible pace." Andreas M. Antonopoulos, Why Dumb Networks Are Better. Monopolies on Knowledge. As books became more accessible and affordable, individuals were now personally consuming, reflecting upon, and critiquing written texts. It was an idea meritocracy. No longer was the, quote, truth conferred solely by the ordained to the illiterate masses inside of churches. Printing presses and print shops were cropping up all over the continent, and like the spread of the Black Death, mass-produced printed books and texts were now spreading across Europe and the world with similar force. It was the start of mass communication, and it ended the church's monopoly over knowledge, including interpretations of religious texts. Printed books worldwide. In 1456, there were 180. In 1500, there were 20 million. A sharp increase in literacy rates across Europe as a result of the lowered cost of books meant that the literate elite would soon be challenged. Eventually, this would also lead to an emerging middle class. Fast forward to present day, where global financial literacy is the next major frontier to unlocking human potential and innovation. As was the case with literacy in the Middle Ages, financial literacy is a privilege currently afforded by the wealthy and elite. Similarly, as literacy rates rose as a result of increased access to books, it can be hypothesized that financial literacy will rise with access to sound money. Communication protocols. We use protocols for transmitting data between each other and machines each day. SMTP or email, American Sign Language, TCP/IP, etc. Protocols earn their adoption by giving users greater means of expression, fidelity, efficiency, or scale in their ability to communicate. Gutenberg's press standardized the process for packaging and transmitting information through the mass production of books and pamphlets. Previously, the process was undertaken by hand, using trained monks as labor. His movable metal type system increased the speed and reduced the costs of book production, enabling the dissemination of information on a massive scale. Bitcoin has, quite simply, turned money into data. By standardizing the structure of transactions and significantly reducing the cost to verify them, we can now transact peer-to-peer and across great distances. Open protocols like Bitcoin enable pseudonymous transactions, an extension of the pseudonymous digital identities that have already been commonplace. Practically speaking, this is very hard and costly to combat. For centuries, authors have employed pseudonyms to publish work so that it may be assessed on its own merit rather than through any associated preconceptions held by the reader. It gives a voice to the underrepresented and provides protection to the vulnerable. Of course, this certainly can be abused, but we must weigh the benefits. Power laws. Languages follow power laws in interconnected post hunter-gatherer societies, simply because this increases opportunities to collaborate and trade. This means that we tend to converge on a few common languages, English, Spanish, Hindi, Mandarin, as shelling points, with local dialects forming a long tail. Money, as we've established, is also a language for communicating value, and follows a similar distribution. Though with the advent of globally accessible borderless money, it is no longer confined to a local population, and thus permits the natural evolution of money as a winner-take-all phenomenon. You may protest that a government will not cede power, especially in the case of controlling the production of money. It's just as ridiculous as thinking that a dominant moral authority would ever cede power over the production and dissemination of information. The printing press holds a lesson for where we might be headed. Technologies that threaten existing power structures are often the target of misinformation and scare campaigns by incumbents or, quote, concerned citizens. Knowledge is power. Printing, gradually and then suddenly, sound familiar? Weakened the power of the church, democratizing access to recorded human knowledge. Quote, because the church attempted to suppress the printing press, most of the new volumes were published in those areas of Europe where the writ of the established authority was the weakest. This may prove to be a close analogy with attempts by the U.S. government today to suppress encryption technology. The church found that censorship did not suppress the spread of subversive technology. It merely assured that it was put to its most subversive use. Rees-Mogg and Davidson, from The Sovereign Individual. The printing press's design was such that it was able to be replicated using common materials, meaning towns or groups of sufficient size, wealth, and inclination could own one. It was the democratization of publishing. It also provided a shield of protection for those publishing under a pseudonym. Scientific research, previously a solitary pursuit due to the challenge of handwriting publishing and the inability to reach a sizable audience, accelerated sharply in the following centuries. Society was now freer, but operating in uncharted territory for which there were no precedents. Although the printing press itself is a neutral technology, the power to spread information of any kind was now available to anyone who could pay for it. Humans would have to learn to navigate this new paradigm by updating the models through which they viewed the order of the world and the process by which they imparted trust. The new paradigm. The Bitcoin protocol is the modern-day printing press. It's democratizing access to sound money in the same way that Gutenberg's innovation democratized access to knowledge. The rewiring of minds to basic economic principles that are both observable and quantifiable has begun. Giving any individual residing in a jurisdiction that protects free speech an exit from their national fiat monetary system. It also gives those without protected free speech a way to skirt their oppressor, as wealth is now indistinguishable from any other string of encrypted data. With a similar hold over the behaviors and outlook of society, the Federal Reserve, by setting the price of money, is our modern-day Catholic Church, with similar folklore propagated, such as, quote, "Modern inflation is good and necessary. Spending creates wealth, and GDP growth is to be worshipped as God." A shift in era. A zero-to-one innovation cannot be undone. There is no way to put the genie back in the bottle. For better or worse, the structure of society is forever altered. And despite the initial unanticipated negative consequences of printing money, there are few people today that would wish to forego the benefits enjoyed by humans throughout the last 500 years. Francis Bacon, a co-creator of the scientific method, wrote in 1620 that the printing press, along with gunpowder and the compass, were the inventions that forever changed the world. Quote, "At the end of the Middle Ages, the monolithic church as an institution had grown senile and counterproductive, becoming a major drag upon productivity. The burdens it imposed upon the population were pushing living standards down." Rees-Mogg and Davidson, from The Sovereign Individual. However, not all jurisdictions advance at the same pace. Regions that are effective in preventing and discouraging the use of information-freeing technologies due to their governance systems and locations are gradually left behind. This has a profoundly negative impact on society, robbed of the new methods of expression and scientific advancement that follows. As the printing press ushered in the start of the Renaissance, Bitcoin is one of the fundamental technologies ushering in the information age. In incentivizing the development of chip technology, ASICs, and lower-cost energy production and capture, Hayvan's paradox, Bitcoin is leading a similar charge toward technological advancement. Conclusion. Jurisdictional borders are once again becoming more porous to information flows. However, this time, societies possess the ability to permissionlessly transact value. If there is one concrete lesson to draw from this essay, it's this. Information always finds a way. The consequences of this cannot be understated and should be celebrated. For it is only detrimental to the form of authority whose power is derived solely by restricting the flow of information and manipulating price signals. When such an authority reacts by attempting to prevent the adoption of information-freeing technologies, which is only feasible temporarily, their people and jurisdiction suffers in the long run. The skilled who can leave will find a way, and the capital that can leave eventually goes where it's best treated. This is a guest post by Anil. Opinions expressed are entirely their own, do not necessarily reflect those of BTC Incorporated or Bitcoin Magazine. He has got a really great list of references here at the bottom, which we will go over in just a second. Let's take a quick break before we get into Guy's take on this amazing article and hit our sponsor real fast. It is time to thank our amazing sponsor, Shift Crypto, for their wonderful product, the BitBox Hardware Wallet. This thing is an open source, simple to use, Swiss made, Bitcoin dev secured hardware wallet for your Bitcoin cold storage. These guys are absolutely serious engineers. You got to check out the episode where we talk with CEO and co-founder Douglas Backham all about this stuff. They have truly made one of, if not the best hardware wallets, and simple BitBox app to go with it for onboarding new people safely into the Bitcoin space. And they even have a lot of other great products on their website if you want to check out. They got like sealed backup cards if you want to write down your seed, additional micro SD cards for backups, the steel wallet for the hardcore backup in, you know, worst case scenarios, and even tamper evident bags that you can put these things in. So if you haven't gotten a solid hardware wallet for your Bitcoin savings, you need to. And always remember, buy from the manufacturers and from someone you can trust. Never go to a retailer. That is a recipe for disaster. The BitBox O2 is where it's at. Check them out at guyswan.com/bitbox. So I know I've said this a lot, but Bitcoin Magazine has absolutely been killing it lately. I have not been able to keep up with what they have been publishing. And this is from Anil. I'm not sure exactly how to say that, but first time author on the show. I'll have the link to his social in the, to his Twitter profile in the show notes. But it's Anil Said So is the handle. A-N-I-L is his name. But this is just, a really great piece. And I love the printing press analogy, because I think it's such, it's one of the most perfect historical corollaries that we got to see, and we can compare the entire outcome of. Like, we can look at 200, 300 years of history and really see what the long-term consequences of this were, and how it impacted and kind of changed those fundamental pieces of society, which it was something really nuanced, right? It's not like a massive shift. It's a very subtle shift in one of the fundamental elements that make a society possible, or that make us a society rather than isolated individuals. So you can really just, if you just look through history, it's almost impossible. Like since then, there's no way to really find an end to how greatly the printing press impacted society. You know, the idea of individual liberty, the default assumption that we take for granted now, even though so few people understand the actual details, like can actually break it down logically, but the idea that we have rights was post that age. It was only after realizing that the authorities are simply not always correct, that they were actually exposed to criticism and alternative ideas, that suddenly so much of what they did not hold up to any scrutiny. And no matter how hard the authorities tried, the technology simply moved too fast. It made it too cheap and too easy to propagate information that didn't have to funnel through their central narrative, their central ideologies, and then get twisted or interpreted or translated, if you will, into the correct ideology. Now think about, just try to imagine, picture in your head, get some vague idea of how much an impact. You know, going back through the broad strokes of this article, the impact that the information, or excuse me, that the printing press had simply from making information cheaper. You know, there was an old piece that I read. I thought it was Ter de Meester's Reformation, the Bitcoin Reformation, but it wasn't. But I've not been able to find it. If anybody knows, please let me know if anybody remembers this. But there was a statistic on literacy rates from the beginning and the end of the 1500s. So it was like the 16th century, like, you know, 1490-ish was the Gutenberg a creation of the printing press, and then what happened at 1590, at 1600. And after the invention of the printing press, there was just a staggering increase in literacy rates. The statistic, whatever it was, in the specific area that they were referring to was just crazy. And I'm not going to say what I think it was because I'm probably wrong and I just don't remember. But if anybody does remember that piece, like which one it was or the statistic, let me know. Hit me up on Twitter because I would really like to find that again if I can. But something really interesting about the printing press is that was basically an extension of written history. So just the developing of written language was such a massive impact on the world. It moved us from an oral tradition to a written tradition, that there was oral history, and there's still a ton of history that was still passed down by word of mouth and never got saved, never properly got propagated, that was not able to get around those centralized institutions or that tiny little subset of humanity that could actually write. Their ideas dominated, while 99.9% of the ideas and the history just got pushed under the rug if it wasn't fitting or if it wasn't what the powers that be, the ones who centrally control the information tools, it wasn't what they wanted. But the printing press changed this. It fully moved us into a decentralized written history. So prior to the mass printing of information, our history was a lot more liquid. It was more fluid. It was unreliable. Oral histories were told as big, elaborate stories and relied on heavily on collective narratives without the ability to double-check the work, in a sense. So even a mild examination of today, like look at people just in general, it shows how obviously potent a collective narrative can be to completely destroy the truth in the favor of what feels correct or what aligns with the puzzle pieces we already have in our heads, rather than actually looking at the details. Written language, and by extension, the printing press, when written language was basically, quote unquote, democratized, allowed those perspectives and alternative ideals and criticisms and interpretations to remain persistent across time. And same with definitions and ideals. It slowed shifts in language that were naturally taking place. It slowed the malleability of definitions so that we could actually reference because we could actually reference what it means in text. We could go back. We didn't have to rely on ourselves or our friends or our social circles, and therefore it's less likely that our little tribe has a different definition from the next tribe or community or neighborhood, whatever you want to call it, because we have this bedrock of what's the definition? How is it used in this story? We have this reliable, consistent underbelly, I guess, informing all of our spoken language. Now, obviously, this doesn't stop any of those natural processes. It simply changes the degree and speed that they occur within how we talk and how we communicate. Now, the printing press simply made information cheap. In doing so, it actually birthed an entire industry that became synonymous with its name. Like, that's where the idea of the press comes from, was the concept that anybody could simply propagate information with a printing press. Now, if we want to think about, like, just what happens when you make information cheaper, think about, let's before we get into the Bitcoin specifically, think about the internet. Just the internet by itself, like the age that we are living through. The printing press made information and ideas cheaper. The internet has made them essentially free. So rather than, while the printing press connects us, you know, through some slow, steady printing of books, which was, you know, orders of magnitude improvement over the system prior to it, but still it required the moving of paper and technology. There were still generational gaps and migrations of information into different cultures across continents and into new languages. Today, with the internet, we are connected everywhere instantly for free, essentially. That alone is as important or more so than the printing press. That alone is going to so deeply change the world that it will be very, very difficult for us to fathom. It already is, clearly. I mean, shit, the President of the United States just had his Twitter account banned because they're claiming that it enabled him an attempted overthrow of the U.S. Capitol. Now, no matter how ridiculous whether you disagree or agree with that assessment, or if it's absurdly overblown, is irrelevant. The very idea that this is a potentiality is rather insane. And this is just the beginning. This is the first of the unravelings of our collective narratives. As I've said before, as I think we live through the great disillusionment that this age is perfectly described or very well informed. If you look at it through a lens of our collective narratives are breaking down. We're seeing the imbalances, the consequences of bad policy and systemic risks that we've been taking and building up for decades are finally coming to fruition. And rather than having some cohesive idea where we're all watching the same three TV channels broadcast over radio waves, we now have access to millions of different narratives and perspectives, and we're splintering into 1,000 different dominant ways of looking at the world, and it's increasing division. We're now living in our own little isolated bubbles, and our perspectives are truly like what we believe is what we see. It's not the other way around. How we think about the world and how we mentally frame the things that we are assessing absolutely decides what we see and think about the world. And we are living through a time in which the cohesion around that mental framing has broken and splintered into 1,000 different pieces. The impacts of that are going to be huge. Now think about this in the context of value. So the printing press was what enabled us to have all of these different ideas and this separation again of the cohesive narrative to create new concepts, to create new ideologies, and it led to the Renaissance. Now we are doing that again with the internet, except that we're going back to an oral history and visual history actually has the same staying power as our written history. So online, we're not just writing things down. Like the full scope of human interaction is now possible online. Well, at least we're getting there. It's increasingly more and more that we interact and do online is able to mimic interaction in the real world. I have tons of internet-only friends that I've only, and you know, many I've never met in real life, and some I've only met at a Bitcoin conference. This has allowed us to access vast new stores of information, tons of new perspectives, new interpretations, and new avenues of trust, new means of trust. Authority is slowly dying as our source of legitimacy. It's becoming that the ideas live or die on their own. It has a lot of chaos to begin with. It will have a ton of fallout, and it will be messy as shit during the transition because most of us are entirely immature and we don't know. We're moving into a new space. It's like, you know, a kid who grows up driving a car and using steering wheels and like knows how to play with a car-like toy is going to be a better driver at the age of 12 than a 70-year-old who lived in the Stone Age that's thrown into a Mazda. And that's kind of where we are, that we've been thrown in an entirely new environment that we have no idea how to assess. We don't have the tools to, and it's changing the operation of the tool itself, and the consequences of the tools are changing faster than we are able to learn how to assess them, how to actually make sense of them. Our literacy, quote unquote, of the digital age, of weighing one narrative against another, is incredibly bad. And it will take a long time to sort through that. But here's something that's really interesting. Is one of the reasons why we kind of suck so bad at evaluating these things is because so much information and knowledge is about what it's worth. We don't have accurate information for value. We do not have proper metrics to account for and measure economic value. While our perception of reality and how we communicate is based on information that we have access to, our life blood that decides whether or not we live or die, whether we prosper or fall into poverty, is the information of value. That has been completely dictated by a central authority. We are living under the equivalent, just like Anil says in this thing, in this amazing piece, we are living under the equivalent of the Catholic Church of banking systems. Our evaluations and the trade-offs that we make every day, billions of people around the world who produce the goods that actually keep the system afloat, is erased so that the central authority can make the metrics look like they want. I posted a tweet today. I've been brainstorming most of the day about, like, you know, what to say in the guy's take here, and like all the ideas, all the, you know, just things about the printing press and the freedom of information and how much this actually impacts the world. And I posted a tweet earlier saying that money, you know, money is a collective accounting system. Like, that's what it is. It's a way to account for the profits or losses that I have against your profits or losses, so that, or the value that I have or something that I produced against yours. So that if I say I've got 100 in profit, you can compare it to your 50 in profit, and we can be talking about the same thing. It's meaningful for my 100 to compare to your 50. That would mean, if that's accurate, if those things are weighing the same thing, or they're measuring the same thing, then whatever processes or things that I'm creating that's producing me 100 is twice as valuable as the thing that someone else is producing that's resulting in 50. It's meaning that there's this incredibly desirable and extremely valuable thing that we should be doing more of, and then there is this other thing that we should be doing less of. So when I decide to pay, or I decide not to pay for, let's say, solution A at $150, but instead choose for some alternative B that does the exact same job for $100, this must be a meaningful and accurate decision because A and B are being weighed with the same metric. Think about it in terms of weights. So imagine I say that I want to, somebody asked me which one I want to carry for the next year. I'm going to carry an item around. And one is weighed at 100, and another one is weighed at 10. Now, 100 what and 10 what? What if the 100 is actually 100 grams and the 10 is 10 kilograms? If there is no consistency in the metric for the two options, I end up what looks like the correct nominal choice, but end up carrying a huge weight that I never should have been burdened with. And it's because someone else didn't want to carry the weight. The tweet that I was referring to that I never even got to: money printing is a fraud. It is a way for the political and central banking system to cook the books when the results don't work out in their favor. They are literally manipulating the costs and the weights of their own metric because they are finding out that the promises they made means they have to carry all this extra weight. So instead, they make their 100 equal 100 grams and our 10 equal 10 kilograms so that we end up carrying the weight because they made promises that they could never deliver on. So when they print money, they don't have any weight to carry around. They just take it off their own shoulders and put it onto everyone else's. We are the ones that work hard for money. They make an infinite amount of it for free whenever they feel they need to fix the problems that they cause. And all of it is at our expense. It is fraud. It is manipulation, specifically at our expense to their benefit. Counterfeiting is immoral for a very explicit reason. It's not about who does it. It's not if Bob counterfeits money, it's immoral and bad and destructive to the economy. But if Nancy prints money, well, then it's great and it's really productive and useful for the economy. When did we abandon such a stupidly obvious truth that counterfeiting is just wrong? It doesn't matter what label you put on it or which building you do it out of. It is destructive and immoral in all of them. Bitcoin solves this. Bitcoin fixes this. Bitcoin restores the balance of the economic weights. No longer can $100 be free for one person and incredibly expensive for another. 100 sats is 100 sats. One Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. Nobody gets free points on the Bitcoin ledger. It is a systemic replacement that immunizes a new financial system against this exact fraud. And in doing so, it will make access to true economic information free to everyone across the globe. This cannot be overstated. Real prices in a global economy will create more prosperity than we have seen in centuries, possibly ever. It will rebalance and adjust to correct so many systemic problems that have been poisoning the entire economic structure since 1913. And even before that, because we never actually had fully sound money that could actually move and operate as accurately and as independently as Bitcoin. It was always subject to some trusted authority. It was almost always subject to a government. And it was always slow and hard to do at scale. You know, I'll recommend this a million more times still as this show continues. But I'm going to do it again just because I think this is so critical to understand. If you want to dig into anything about economics, the most important piece and the most important concept that you could dig into is The Use of Knowledge in Society by F.A. Hayek. Prices are the most dense economic indicators possible. And they only work. They are only dense economic indicators if they respond to billions of individuals making equally influential economic choices. I.e., the trade-off of one person's $100 is the same $100 trade-off as somebody else. Even if it's a, you know, somebody who has $1 million and somebody who has $101, that both in both conditions or in both situations, the value or the production to make that $100 choice is the same, even if it's far easier for someone else to do so. As long as everybody is judging, everybody is consistently using the same underlying foundation to measure the value, the price is the most dense economic gauge that we have to make decisions, to change our behavior and respond to events in the marketplace. You know, everything that alters our ability to measure and produce things of value. Prices are a gauge. They're a gauge on what's happening in the economy. So when your altitude gauge tells you in a plane that you're going to fly into a cliffside or that you're, you know, flying down into the ground, the solution isn't to break the glass on it and push the gauge to where it says we're flying up. It's to actually pull up the plane so that we don't die. When central banks print money and manipulate interest rates arbitrarily, what they are doing is breaking the glass and just pushing the gauge. They're just saying, don't worry, everything's, look how high we're flying. We're in the clouds. Ignore the 30% unemployment. Ignore the fact that everybody's out of a job, that we've just destroyed mainstream America, that, you know, we've lost half of the freaking restaurants across the country. Everybody's out of business. Everybody's in debt, and people are desperate for just $600 to get their rent paid and not implode into all of their debts and liabilities that everybody is paycheck to paycheck on, and nobody, like 70% of the country, has less than a couple of $100 in savings. Ignore all that obvious horrible conditions and fragility across the entire global economy, and let's just look at the gauge. We broke the glass, we pushed it all the way back up, everything's wonderful. That is what the central banks and the governments are doing across the board. This is like business as usual now. They're just pushing the gauge around whenever the hell they need to make it look like we're flying up, and we are literally flying into the ground. Now, inevitably, pulling up might be difficult. It might throw people back in their seats, you know, depending how steeply we are plummeting. It might make a whole bunch of people throw up. It's going to be really uncomfortable, not because pulling up is a bad thing, but because we are currently making horrible decisions, and changing course is hard. Always has been, always will be. This will never change. The idea that a central bank is going to forever prevent economic shifts from occurring, that it will smooth out any turmoil by arbitrarily manipulating the points that we use to figure out where the hell to go and whether or not we should be flying up or down, should not put you at ease. It should scare the living shit out of you. And this is all because that information is centralized, that it is controlled by a Catholic Church of banks, and it has never been freed to actually operate based on real conditions in the economy, based on the actual people, independently, to measure something meaningful in the economy. Correcting for just the past 50 years of debt bubble is going to be extremely painful. And not because high interest rates are a bad thing, but because negative and zero interest rates are absolutely batshit crazy. And even more so when we are hundreds of percent more in debt than we actually have productive capacity, and getting worse by orders of magnitude every year. Bitcoin destroys the ability to manipulate the gauges. It makes them accurate again so we can make real economic choices, so that we can actually know what the trade-offs are when we're deciding between A and B, so that we can accurately gauge our profits and losses, so that we can plan for the long term, so that we know the cost of pointless consumption today at the expense of our future selves, so we can communicate and do business with people as if there are no borders, and we can begin to collectively make economic value judgments as one species, as a complete global community, rather than hundreds of isolated countries with different capital controls, different currencies, and arbitrary borders and restrictions on the flow of value. The freeing of information and making it cheaper leads to economic prosperity. We saw this during the Renaissance and in the centuries after the printing press. Because it lets new ideas spread around the world and become cheaper, they spread faster, they evolve faster, innovation speeds up, ideation just in general. Now, the freeing of economic information is prosperity. Accurate economic pricing is how we measure it. It's how we actually create it. It is the difference between building a house from a plan where every single length is different every single time you try to measure or put down a piece of wood or hammer something together, and building a house with perfectly consistent measurements. The former isn't building a house at all. It's just wasting precious time and resources to build some mutated, uninhabitable tangle of wood and nails. But to have a perfectly consistent one is to be able to build the house. Now, I want to clarify one thing again before we're getting to the end of this here. But I just wanted to say that the consistent measurement, again, is not the price. Do not mistake the price volatility for the ability of Bitcoin to measure value. The consistent measurement is not the price of something. It's not the price of a good. It's the tool, it's consistency in the tool used to price it. Now, I know this is super hard to get your head around, so I really want to stress this. The price fluctuates because value, supply, and knowledge and demand fluctuate in the market. The price is just the readout of the gauge. The monetary consistency I'm talking about is the gears that make the gauge work. If your speedometer is going all over the place because, you know, your foot fell asleep and you lost feeling in it and you can't tell whether or not you're pressing the gas or you just keep sloshing back and forth from flooring it to the ground and you know, not pressing it at all, well, your speedometer is consistent. Your speed is volatile. Bitcoin is the speedometer. The price is the speed. Our speedometer should read exactly 20 miles per hour whenever we are going 20 miles per hour. 20 is the price. The measure is the gears inside that speedometer that will always make 20 equal 20 no matter when you are pressing it, no matter where you are, no matter whose car you are in or who the president is. That's the consistency I'm referring to. Value can only be determined through comparison. There's no objective unit. It is literally only in how a unit of one thing compares to a unit of another. Even though we think of the dollar as like this ultimate measure, it's not. We're just comparing the dollar to other things. If somebody prints $6 trillion, well, then our measurement yesterday of something in dollars is not equal to our measurement tomorrow of something in dollars. We've changed the speedometer. And that's why money has developed and changed over time, because certain things in certain geographical areas were great monies. And then after new technologies or after meeting, new societies or different areas that, you know, had a lot of seashells versus there were no seashells, suddenly these things were no longer good speedometers. They weren't good gauges anymore. They lost the attributes that made them good at that very job. They were the thing in an economy to which that you could measure other things against. But when any of those things, whenever the measurements themselves are unstable in supply, if they're always changing, if you can produce more of them with some new technology or some new thing, well, then they're speedometers with gears that are never consistent. So 20 doesn't equal 20. But something with a supply that's inelastic. This is why gold and silver became the dominant money, because they were the best in with these characteristics. Something that there will never be more of. It frees economic information from this inconsistency. It produces a pricing mechanism that responds to real changes in the world, actual shifts in knowledge and perspective, in real opportunities that pop up or fall away, and actual demand and everything that goes into that. This will absolutely make economic calculation orders of magnitude more accurate, and it will strip the power of the Catholic Church, the central banks and governments of our day, to dictate their subjective, no skin in the game, opinions from dominating our actual economic calculations, our real economic decisions. And that's what we have. We have governments and central banks replacing our real skin in the game, worked our asses off for it economic choices and comparisons with their opinions and valueless, no skin in the game judgments. And I think, like I said, you can't overstate the impact of that. I think Bitcoin will do to the discovery and communication of value what the printing press and the internet has done for the communication of information. Now, I really want to, before we close this out, I want to say what I think that means, how I think this is going to compare to the renaissance of the printing press. But before we do, really quick, let's hit our sponsors. We have two awesome sponsors, the mobile banking services and free, like no trading fee exchange at level.co, lvl.co. And of course, the Bitbox O2 from Shift Crypto, an awesome hardware wallet, simple, open source. If you've got Bitcoin savings, you got to get yourself a Bitbox. You can find both of these guys and their products at guyswan.com right there on the front page. And a thank you to both of them for supporting Bitcoin Audible. Before we close this one out, so I'll reiterate, I think the discovery of this, I think the system that is Bitcoin and being able to create a digital, borderless, sound money will alter the gauges, will alter the ability to communicate, understand, and make accurate trade-offs for value in the same way in aggregate, like the printing press and the internet has enabled communication. And where I think the fallout of the ability to communicate has led to division and conflict rather than cohesion is in the fact that that information has no ability to determine and measure value against each other. So our opinions are just pitted against our opinions. And we fight over which one has more control over the political system to enforce that opinion, and rather than the real value on each other. The revolution that we saw during the Renaissance was a revolution of the mind. This will be one of a revolution of value and everything that that entails. This means the value of our lives, of our time, of our futures, of our families, of our dreams, our past, everything. The ability to accurately compare and judge what those trade-offs are. If you thought the freedom of information created prosperity, you have not seen anything yet. We are moving from the monetary stone age straight into the digital age. And it's all because of Bitcoin. I'll catch you on the next Bitcoin Audible. And until then, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.